Catholic Answers Live. 888-318-7884. 888-318-7884. 888-31-TRUTH. To talk to our guest in the first hour, my name is Christopher Check. I am president of Catholic Answers. I'm sitting in for Cy Kellett, feeling a little bit ill today, back in the seat tomorrow, please God. Coming up in our second hour, Ask a Priest, with a priest we know well, my brother, Father Paul Check, director of the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe in La Crosse, Wisconsin. All your questions for priests on the spiritual life, the sacramental life, prayer life, morals. Try to stump him. In the first hour, I'm very honored and happy to have Dr. Logan Gage, who is the chairman of the philosophy department at Franciscan University, Steubenville, Ohio. Welcome, Professor Gage. How are you?
Doing great. So great to be with you again.
I'm really glad to have you. Dr. Gage is speaking, my friends, at the Catholic Answers Conference in September, September 21 to 24, right here in beautiful San Diego. And I know, Logan, we've had, of course, robust sign-up because your colleague there from Steubenville, Dr. Scott Hahn, is on the program, and I'm sure he's drawing in. I'm sure he's drawing in a lot of registrations. But what I keep telling people is the dark horse of the conference, the one who's really going to blow everyone away, is this other great speaker and mind from Franciscan University, Steubenville, Dr. Logan Gage. So we're looking.
Well, thank you.
We're looking forward to having you. 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. My friends, this first hour, we're going to answer the question, what is good? How do we know what is good? If you have any questions related to determining what is good, open up the topic for us a little bit more here, Dr. Gage, so we can inspire some interest in our callers.
Yeah, sure. There's a few different things we might mean by asking that question. I was thinking about it, and you know, the question, how do we know what is good, could mean a few things. One question there that we might explore would be kind of a skeptical question, like, as in, do we know what's good at all? You know, do we have any access to that? Is that the kind of thing we can know what's good or what's bad? There's a lot of skepticism in some quarters about that. Another thing we might mean by you know, asking how do we know what's good is, what's the process, right? Like, what's the learning process by which we come to know about good and evil? And there, I think we have a lot to say about different ways, perhaps, in which we know truths about what's good and what's evil. And then maybe a third and final way to understand this question is the philosophical interpretation, I might say, something like this. What makes the good things good, and what makes the bad things bad?
Right.
And there we got to do a little bit of philosophy. So maybe a skeptical interpretation, do we know what's good? Maybe a question about the process, like how do we come to know these things? And then thirdly, how do we know why are the good things good? Why are the bad things bad? So three different ways we might take this.
And I think in the Venn diagram, there's going to be a lot of overlap in these categories.
Absolutely.
888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. Chris Check sitting in for Cy Kellett, my guest, Dr. Logan Gage, head of the philosophy department at Franciscan University, Steubenville. We're talking about what is good. Is there something that is in fact this a reality? Can we know it? If it is, how do we know it? And then what are the ways that, of course, we have access to it? Dr. Gage, let's maybe tip the hand a little bit here. A lot of this, you would argue, I'm guessing, we do know quite apart from the reality of divine revelation.
Absolutely. I think we have, you know, good access, not infallible access through our natural faculties, but really good access to basic truths about what's good and what's evil, just using reason. We can see it all around us. I think sometimes we don't know how to answer the further question, well, wait, how do we know those things? And then we start to have skeptical worries, but But I'd ask everyone to sort of pause and say, wait a minute, you definitely know that torturing kittens for fun is not a good thing to do. You definitely know that. It's one of the most sure things you know. How you know that and how you came to learn that, those are different questions. But you definitely have, you know, some decent moral knowledge.
888-318-7884. What is good? How do we know it? Dr. Logan Gage, my guest. So let me follow up with that on the kittens.
Sure.
I know that torturing kittens is bad because I, you know, I just sense that. I feel that's a bad thing to do. I actually kind of have a sort of a revulsion, or I just have a sort of a visceral reaction to the idea of torturing kittens. And by the way, I'm a dog person, but nonetheless, I still feel that this is probably something bad to do. So it's kind of a feeling, but feelings, you're suggesting maybe those feelings are informed by something else, or those feelings cause us to go deeper. And so there's something that begins maybe in the imagination or in the emotion, but then we can get a more intellectual grasp of it.
Absolutely, absolutely. In fact, I would urge people not to immediately abandon their moral beliefs just because they start, say, with an emotional or sort of guttural reaction to things. Perhaps we're having those emotional reactions because we're sensing something before we can process it all, right? So if I see someone being mugged in a dark alley and I immediately get angry before I even fully realize what's happening, that this is before I form any arguments that this is an injustice, well, my emotions there are doing a good job. We often think of emotions as misinforming us, leading us astray, but in typical cases, you know, our emotions inform us about things in the outer world before we even fully process it rationally. And so, yeah, you get angry, and that alerts you immediately to an injustice, and only later can you unravel sort of why it's an injustice, because taking money from other people is wrong and that sort of thing. So I would urge people actually not to dismiss a sort of a starting place with the emotions. They can be fully rational things to listen to.
888-318-7884. We're talking, the show is Catholic Answers Live. We're talking about what is good and how do we know it with someone who actually is trained to answer this question for us, a philosopher. And I want to come back to philosophy in a second here, but let me follow up on something that you said. And I want to make sure that I understand it, because I think it's it's something I think about a great deal, and I think it's important. You sort of talked about sort of a pre-rational knowledge. Am I using the phrase correctly there?
Sure. Yeah, before the front of your mind gets to things, sometimes you sense or feel things with your emotions.
It's almost like the knowledge of the nursery, if you will, sort of like what we get from nursery rhymes, and then from reading poetry, or even, I don't know, from observing the natural world. I know that John Senior, who ran the Pearson Integrated Humanities program there at KU in the 70s and 80s, talked a lot about this pre-rational knowledge. And one of the, he even argued that before we could get to sort of the rational philosophy, that we had to sort of cover this area of pre-rational knowledge. People needed to learn how to think in this way first, or understand in this way, I guess I should say.
Yeah, absolutely. And this makes a lot of sense in our Catholic tradition, right? We have a well-developed philosophy by which we not only have a body and a soul, but we are this union of the two. And it makes some sense that you know, in our framework, that God would give us a way to very quickly process information, to sort of stay away from danger, to run towards, you know, people who need help before we even have to make, you know, if we had to sit around and make an argument for everything. I mean, believe me, I'm a philosopher. I love arguments. But if we had to sit around and form a committee and make an argument first, right, we would be in real trouble in many situations. And so we instinctually sort of have these bodily and emotional reactions to things. And that helps us care for ourselves. And certainly when it comes to matters of great danger and that sort of thing, you know, you see other people running away from a building, you know, to just run in the same direction as all those people. You don't need to form a syllogism first.
Right. 888-318-7884. We're trying to find out this hour, what is good? Is it is good knowable? Is that something we can know and say, yes, that's good, that's evil, or that's bad? And then what are the ways that we get to that knowledge? And then I guess ultimately, why is answering this question important for the moral life and, you know, for our salvation? 888-318-7884. So, Dr. Gage, I said I wanted to come back to this fact that you're a philosopher, you're the chair of the philosophy department there at Franciscan, where I'm very happy. My youngest son Nathaniel is in school, and you've got a great crew there on your team. And yet, so here's something that an undergraduate who is studying philosophy is going to get asked a lot. Someone is going to say to him, "What are you going to do with that?" Right? Like, what are you going to do with that philosophy degree? I'm sure you've heard that before. When people put that to you, or when they put it to your students, how do you encourage them to answer that question?
Sure. I'd say two things. I'd say first, people would be quite surprised. You remember a few years ago, Marco Rubio was ragging on philosophy majors, and other politicians got involved, the same thing. But they are just misinformed. I mean, in terms of, you know, if we're just talking to talk about the actual practical benefits in terms of salaries and jobs and all that, turns out philosophy majors do extremely well. Their median salaries, you know, 10 years after graduation are very high compared to their peers. When it comes to going to graduate school, right, they're number one consistently in, let's say, for instance, how they do on the LSAT, the law school entrance exam, and that sort of thing. But, of course, philosophy is more important than just those practical benefits. Philosophy didn't begin so that we could get jobs.
Right.
Philosophy began because we wonder about things and we want to ask the deepest questions. And then we want to see if we can give rational and organized answers to those questions. You know, do we have to settle for just what we're told, from someone else? Or can we think through these things rationally? And philosophy is a discipline where we get to ask all the really hard questions that the scientists and sociologists and so forth don't want to deal with, right, about the soul and God and those sorts of things. And so I think we do philosophy because we wonder about our world and what's real. It happens to have some great practical benefits. But I think we should do philosophy even if it didn't have those benefits.
888-318-7884. So, I would venture to say that philosophers are good ones, or well-formed ones, well-trained ones, are in greater demand now probably than ever in human history, as we just descend into a kind of utter irrational chaos within our culture.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's so refreshing when you run into someone, even someone who disagrees with you, but it's someone that can follow an argument, can stay with the thread of the argument, can see what the evidence on both sides is, and has a well-formed thought, even if we disagree with them. That's a refreshing thing. What's the sad truth is that, you know, many people with no training at all have a hard time doing that. And so I always encourage young people to at least take some philosophy, see if you can learn how to organize your thoughts. You'll be a better writer and communicator in the end, but you'll just be a better thinker.
888-318-7884. My friends, we're going to take a short break. Before we do, I mentioned at the beginning of the hour, the Catholic Answers Conference is coming up very quickly, September 21 to 24 here in San Diego at the beautiful Hyatt Aventine, La Jolla. And we're very happy to have Logan Gage on the program this year. The theme is I Believe in God. Logan, you're going to be talking about a particular way that we can come to belief in God at the conference.
That's right. I want to talk about beauty. This relates to sort of what we were just talking about a minute ago, the emotions and our ability to perceive things. And a lot of people have lost confidence that beauty puts us in touch with reality. And so I actually want to make an argument for God's existence based upon some facts about beauty.
Good, good, good. 888-318-7884. My friends, if you register before July 31st and use the promo code EARLY, you will save $50. We have special room prices if you're going to stay at the hotel, but the rooms are going very fast, so please don't delay. I can tell you that the number of registrations we have at this moment, that is in mid-July, are the highest they ever have been at this point in the history of the Catholic Answers Conference. So the thing looks like it's going to sell out, so please don't delay registering. CatholicAnswersConference.com. CatholicAnswersConference.com. Right back after this.
Catholic Answers Live.
Underwriting for Catholic Answers Live is provided by Real Estate for Life. Real Estate for Life connects homebuyers and sellers to real estate agents while supporting pro-life organizations. On the web at realestateforlife.org.
Hi, friends. Jonet Williams here. Join me every Wednesday on Women of Grace Live as I welcome New Age researcher and blogger for Women of Grace, Sue Brinkman. Sue and I will be talking about all the wacky things that could distract you from your faith. Psychics, yoga, Reiki, crystals, acupuncture, Ouija boards, tarot cards, and astral traveling are just a few of the stranger things we discuss. That's why we call it Wacky Wednesday. So join us every Wednesday at 11 a.m. Eastern on EWTN Radio.
Catholic Answers Live, 888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH. I'm Chris Check, sitting in Versailles. Kellett back here tomorrow, please God. And my guest, Dr. Logan Gage, chairman of the philosophy department at Franciscan University Steubenville, and also appearing on our program at the Catholic Answers Conference this year, September 21 to 24, here in beautiful San Diego. We're talking this hour, my friends, about what is good. And here we're not meaning it's impossible to find a good pizza in Steubenville, Ohio. I mean, I don't know. I'm not sure. Well, there is that Italian place in the Wintersville, in the next town over, that's quite good. That was a good movie, or he's a good friend. I guess all these get closer and closer to what we mean here when we're talking about good as an objective reality. Am I using that word correctly? You're the philosopher, so you have to correct me.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Good. All right, how do we know it? Is it knowable? Because I guess, Logan, you would tell me there are people who would say, no, actually, that's not something we can know.
Yeah, there are, although surprisingly, or at least it might surprise many people, that is a very, very minority view in philosophy itself. You know, if you go back in philosophy to the major universities about 100 years ago, I think you'd actually find more people who were skeptical that we have a lot of moral knowledge. There you'd find a lot more relativism about morality. Today, almost no one holds that. And think about why for a second, right? We have a lot of people on the left in the academy, people that believe in a certain vision of what they call social justice, and those people are making moral claims all the time. And so those people actually don't want it to be true that, you know, goodness is in the eye of the beholder.
Right, right. 888-318-7884. Shall we take some questions?
Please.
All right. Daniel in Alabama, listening on 94.5 FM. Welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Greetings. Good afternoon, gentlemen.
How are you, Daniel?
Doing well. Just tuned into y'all's conversation and have only been listening for a few minutes, but I heard your discussion about the kittens and then the discussion about the visceral response. When how instantaneously and viscerally we know when there's a crowd. There was an example, use a crowd running from a burning building, that we need to run from the burning building. And Dr. Gage, I believe you said you enjoyed a good debate, so I wanted to call and offer a little bit of a contrary point. And running from that burning building, when the crowd is doing it, I think we should all challenge ourselves to immediately question whether we're doing the right thing by going with the crowd. And today it really, this point presents itself in the culture of the world with the pro-choice movement and the rainbow flags and the pride movement. And it seems like it's everywhere, and it's been everywhere during the month of June, and the media is pushing it down all of our throats. But shouldn't we all, instantly, when there's this mob mentality, shouldn't we all stop and say, wait a minute,
Good question,
we
Daniel.
We are not a part of that mob.
Hey, that's a totally fair question, and I think you have a really good point there. Certainly when you see a certain sort of consensus and something doesn't strike you as right about it, you ought to then reason through it. I mean, luckily, we don't just have our initial bodily reactions and things and emotions. God also gave us reason, and so we were able to think through and we're able to distinguish what might just be a weird emotional reaction or aversion to something from something that has good reasons in fact. Now, I actually don't think in the case of, say, something that immediately strikes you as dangerous, I actually think you should start running the other way, and then maybe while you're running, you can then start to reason through it and think, is this a good idea or not? Am I only in, you know, do I have any real reasons to run away? And I think there you should run and ask questions later, is my own inclination. But you're right. Our initial reactions are not infallible, right? We have reason, and then we can question them. And so just because everyone tells us that boys can become girls and girls can become boys, we just hear that over and over and over. If someone thinks they are, then they are. Well, we ought to then use our reason, right? And we shouldn't just go with your first gut reaction and as though God didn't give you any reason to think through these things. So I really do agree with you about that.
How's that, Daniel?
Yeah, very, very, I think we're in agreement. My point would be, when the mob is going one direction, I think we should challenge ourselves to stop and think and say, is this really what I believe is the right thing to do? Or should I, as a Christian, as a Catholic, should I take the more sacrificial role and go and try to help those people in that burning building? Or, you know, just going with the mob is just a very dangerous thing, and I think we should challenge all of ourselves to really question that when we see mob type activity.
Thank you, Daniel.
Right.
If I can follow up, Logan, on what Daniel's saying, I think one of the ways this mob mentality, or what I would maybe describe as kind of go along to get along, it manifests itself, or one of the reasons it manifests itself so broadly, is a confusion of sentiment with rational thought. So I don't want to offend someone who is suffering from same-sex attraction, for example, or is caught up in some self-destructive behaviors, or and I don't want to appear like I'm cruel, or and so is that what this is that sort of sentiment getting in the way of rationality, and then as a consequence not in fact providing what is good?
No, absolutely. I mean, it isn't like our view of homosexuality in our culture changed because we all found a new argument, right? I mean, it clearly had something to do with, you know, portrayals of sympathetic people on TV and so on and so forth. The only thing is, I think we shouldn't go to the opposite extreme, though. We shouldn't say, oh, so our sort of emotional reactions, our feelings, our sentiments, those don't count for anything. They're no good, right? We shouldn't go to that opposite extreme either. God gave us both our emotions and bodily passions, as well as reason, and we need to use all our sources of information to try to find the truth. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Chris? So actually, if I am understanding you correctly, then it's necessary to give some weight to those sentimental feelings.
I certainly think so. I mean, if you have an utter revulsion to, let's say, carving up animals for no good reason, right, and disemboweling them and hanging them in your garage. That's just a weird thing to do. And I hope when I say those sorts of things, you do have a little bit of a revulsion inside. Yeah. And I'm urging us not to dismiss that just because we haven't worked out the arguments of exactly why doing that to animals isn't just or something like that. We ought to pay some attention to our initial reactions, even though they're not, you know, utterly infallible and they don't trump everything else. We certainly don't want our reason to be trumped by emotion, but that doesn't mean that emotion and our instinctual responses should be dismissed.
We're going to run up against a hard break here, and then we'll go back to callers. But so let me ask you, how do I manage that sentiment? And that probably is longer than you can give me in 30 seconds, but how do I know when I'm giving in too much to sentiment and not applying enough rationality, and What's the proper mix here?
Well, it seems that we start with what we have initially. We have a certain reaction, and then we look for reasons in the neighborhood as to what might make this a good or evil action. So if you have a revulsion to something, you might think, huh, what is wrong about that? Is that harming the animals? Is it making myself a worse person? You know, and if after a long period of reflection, maybe you consult the great thinkers of Western civilization, and no one has a good answer, well, then you might doubt that your emotions were on the right track, your reaction. But my guess is usually you can think of some reasons why you felt initially as you did, and they don't just boil down to because mommy said so or something like that. You can find reasons in reality.
So I'm trying to find harmony between that rationality and that
exactly.
sentiment. Yeah. Michael, David, Heather, we'll get you on right after the break. 888-318-7884. Catholic Answers Live, right back after this.
Are you ready to defend your faith in a world of unbelief? Join us at the 9th Annual Catholic Answers Apologetics Conference. This year's theme, I Believe in God, and it'll help you provide clear and charitable answers to atheism, agnosticism, and plain old indifference. Don't miss what promises to be the event of the season. Join us in San Diego from September 21st through 24th as we welcome our special guest, Dr. Scott Hahn, and an all-star lineup of great Catholic speakers. Spend quality time with your favorite Catholic Answers apologists and enjoy 4 days of fun, fellowship, and adoration of the Almighty. Seats are still available, but they're going fast. Visit CatholicAnswersConference.com or call 888-291-8000 to register. Enter promo code EARLY and save $50. That's CatholicAnswersConference.com.
Want to know more about the origins of the Catholic Church? Joe Heschmeyer explores the beginnings of Christianity in The Early Church Was the Catholic Church. Joe digs deep into the words and actions of those who lived right after the apostles to refute anti-Catholic claims of how the faith was lived back then. Order your copy of The Early Church Was the Catholic Church today at shop.catholic.com or get it at a good Catholic bookstore near you.
Our Lord needs articulate defenders of the truth to spread the joy of the Catholic faith. Catholic Answers Monthly Giving Club, Society 315, helps you fulfill the call in 1 Peter 3:15 to always be prepared to make a defense for the hope that is in you. For as little as $10 a month, you'll help Catholics grow in faith, bring lapsed Catholics home, and lead non-Catholics to the truth. Go to CASociety315.com and join today.
Truth Catholic Answers Live. Chris Check sitting in for Cy Kellett. My guest this first hour, Dr. Logan Gage, chairman of the philosophy department at Franciscan University, Steubenville. We're talking about what is good and how do we know it, and then of course, what do we do with that knowledge in with respect to the moral life. Michael in Utah, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hello.
Hey, Michael. We can.
Oh, okay. Well, I think how we know what's good is when we're born, you know, we have an active subconscious mind. And what happens, I think, is, you know, that's why children are able to perceive more things, you know, in different, you know, forms than an adult. And then as we grow, we're subjected to propaganda. We're subjected to theoretical nonsense, indoctrination, TV, radio, things like that. I'm not saying radio is bad. But and then we learn to put that to the side, the subconscious mind, and go more towards rational thought. And how does just to survive in the world, and then so we lose that connection to God. I think the devil's always trying to, you know, Satan's always trying to break that connection with God, and you know, through propaganda, through you know, like the other gentleman was talking about, through LGBTQ, things like that, and you know, just make everything normalized and okay. Oh, it's okay to do this, it's okay to do that. Don't worry about the morals. Morals are for old people. Morals are for people that you know, that are hateful, things like that. I've noticed that the news and media is always trying to make any kind of standard hateful and angry, but they're the ones that, if you see, they're the ones that are on television yelling with their eyes bugging out of the top of their heads, and they're always the ones committing violence and burning buildings down. So they're the ones that are hateful, but they try to invert that reality and make it out to be that people that believe in God are somehow hateful, judgmental, things like, when they couldn't be further from the truth. I mean, God set forth standards. Anybody can read the Bible. I know people say, well, I can't read or anything. Well, there's audiobooks. I mean, you could listen to the Bible. You can have somebody else read it to you, anything.
So a couple of things at work here, Dr. Gage. First, this question of the subconscious and what its condition is as someone, or when someone's born, and then as they mature. But then the other thing that Michael raises is a I guess what sounds to me like, you know, competing versions of what is good, and how we unpack that.
Sure. Yeah, I want to partly agree with you and disagree with you there. I mean, so I agree that when we're born, we often, you know, and our mind is, I think our subconscious is always active. It's always processing information and things. But when, you know, when we're born, we do it seem to pretty quickly have a good sense of justice in terms of, someone's mistreated me, someone's taken my things, right? Children will scream about that. But I'd also say we don't have a perfect sense of justice, so I don't think that reason automatically has to take us away from just a perfect sense of justice. You know, my little children sometimes, you know, think they've been massively mistreated if they aren't served first at the dinner table or something like that. And it's like, well, obviously they can't be served first every time. And so I don't think kids' sense of sort of a just innate, you know, sense of justice is always good, right? The philosopher Rousseau seemed to think something like that. But it seems to me, again, what we want is something like what we were talking about earlier, that a sort of interplay between, you know, reason and, say, instinct and emotion. We start with our initial reactions, but sometimes they just need to be refined, and this is the job of parents, right? The parents have to sort of refine kids' sense of justice. Just because they initially felt mistreated doesn't mean they really were. We have to reason through it and say, put yourself in someone else's shoes and see how this might have made them feel. And we try to reason with them as they grow more and more. And in fact, I would have you notice that that's the mature human position. We try to reason more and more as we grow. And I guess I'd urge you not to dismiss that or throw it out just because some people are misusing that to argue for all kinds of crazy things. You know, we don't throw out logic just because it can be misused. We don't throw out math just because it can be misused. And I would say, let's not throw out reasoning about what's good here just because some people are wrong about things.
How's that, Michael?
Yeah, well, I mean, that sounds good, but I still think that when someone's born, I think they might not know how to use their subconscious or might not know how to interpret it, and that's where the disconnect comes from between what's good and what's not, and that's where you're talking about the refinement, is they might not know how to interpret that because their minds don't have the experience to interpret that in a certain way. But I think it's kind of like a double-edged sword. Through the experience, they lose some of that connection because of the experiences that they have to go through in order to interpret those you know, from the subconscious mind. I mean, they have to kind of, I don't know if you get what I'm saying. They have to, because daily life, they lose that kind of connection.
Yeah, I mean, there's no doubt that because of daily life, we sort of, sometimes we sort of suppress the voice of conscience, the voice of God in our lives. There's no doubt about that. I guess I would just, again, try to say, I think from a Catholic perspective, certainly, we, you know, we want to say something like this: God is a God of reason and truth. And so our reasoning about these things doesn't automatically take us away from just a kind of simple intuitive grasp of the truth. It might confirm our simple reasoning about things might confirm our simple intuitive grasp of the truth. And so reason, I don't think we want to say necessarily takes us away, although it could, right? Sometimes people go to college, they get misinformed about all kinds of things, which is why I'd urge everyone to go to a good college. And then, you know, they think they're reasoning, and again, they're just sort of giving into a mob mentality, or they're not reasoning well from good, solid premises. But I think reason's our friend here. You know, we start with our natural inclinations toward things, and that just needs refinement. And what does it need refinement by? By our reason, looking at the evidence, seeing, well, is this action actually harmful toward community and toward myself and so forth, or is it beneficial? So we can reason about those things, and what we want, again, is a kind of consonance between the two things. We want a kind of consonance between how we initially feel about things, I hope, plus what our evidence says and what's reasonable.
888-318-7884, 888-31-TRUTH, talking to Dr. Gage from Franciscan University about what is good and how do we know it. David in Buffalo, we're going to go to you in a second, but I want to follow up with some with Michael's question here, because it sounds to me like the effects of original sin are part of this calculus of what he was calling subconscious.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we do have some initial sense of justice, but at the same time, it's sort of perverted towards our own wants and needs. You know, Augustine tries to get at this in the early books of the Confessions, where he noted, my students don't like this very much, because they want to say babies are nothing but goodness. You know, and
they haven't had any.
Yeah, that's what I always tell them is, you know, you won't say the same thing necessarily once you've had one. You know, children are beautiful and ontologically they are good, like in their very being. It is good to be a human being. We are made in the image of God with, you know, will and intellect and emotions. But that doesn't mean we're always morally good. We might have some innate sense of justice, but it often gets perverted toward for our own ends, you know? So I notice when you're unjust, and I don't notice as much when I'm unjust. I get angry at you, not necessarily at myself. And so yes, absolutely, that kind of, that initial twisting through the fall is something we got to keep in mind. And that's why we can't just say, oh, all of our sort of, you know, instinctual reactions are always innately good.
888-318-7884, 888-318-7884. A couple of lines open to talk to Dr. Logan Gage. Let's go to David in Buffalo, New York, listening on Stations of the Cross. Welcome, David.
Hi, can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear.
All right. So I think that, like, most philosophy departments in the United States are more in the analytic tradition. So, like, David Hume, Bertrand Russell, and like the emphasis there is like rigorous argumentation, rigorous method, and there you can evangelize with arguments like that are like very sound, like Aquinas's five ways. But my question is, like, how do you go about evangelizing in the context of more like continental philosophy, where like the tradition of thinkers like Derrida or Foucault, where the whole concept of rationality is called into question, as like even if rationality is good or not at all.
Yeah, Dr. Gage, if you can give a little more color there of the distinction between analytical and continental philosophy as you answer this question, I know that'll help a lot of our listeners.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think our caller is correct. So in the analytic tradition, this is mostly the English-speaking tradition of philosophy over the last 150 years. And he named some of the figures there. It's a style or sort of method of philosophy, if you will, more of a style, I might say, in which people prize clarity, logical rigor, and argumentation, and so forth. And then we have philosophy that's done not so much on the British Isles, but on the continent in Europe that we often call continental philosophy. And here this is much more French and German-speaking philosophy. And, you know, we have thinkers like Kant and Hegel in the German tradition, and then a lot of French thinkers, and he mentioned more recently we have people like Foucault and Derrida. But the question I take it, if I'm not mistaken, is something like, how do we sort of, you know, how do we argue, how do we reach people? Maybe it's not through rational argumentation anymore with a lot of people. I guess I would say, I don't know, if somebody's really so far gone that they don't appreciate a sort of argument, I mean, I don't know that there's anything left to say. I mean, obviously, if you abandon reason all the way, we can't use reason to talk you out of it. I do think the kinds of things that might reach people, though, who have gone at least somewhat down that path, and my guess is they haven't totally abandoned reason, but, you know, something like, and by the way, not all continental philosophy has done that, but in particular the strand he's talking about has, the sort of postmodern strand of continental philosophy. I think if someone's heading down that road, though, we can say, you know, but do you really believe that in other areas of your life? You know, so you don't, you think goodness, you know, or claims of truth are just power claims, right? That's kind of sort of one of these postmodern things that we hear a lot in the culture. You're making truth claims, and you're just, that isn't really true. You're just trying to have power over me by asserting that something is true. I guess we should ask people whether they really believe that, right? I mean, let's point to other areas of our life where we don't seem to believe that. You know, so for instance, even in postmodern philosophy, people are making a lot of claims about the way society really works in truth. And they certainly don't believe that their own claims are nothing but power grabs. You know, they really believe that they found the truth of things. They believe in truth about how language works and so forth. And so for people who are tempted to go there, I think we might try to say, you know, number one, do you really believe that in your practice? And then number two, I think we might also ask, you know, not only are you being consistent there, but just, you know, look at what this worldview has sort of brought us, right? It brought us nothing but strife. This isn't the sort of thing you can sort of build a beautiful civilization on, believing that there's no goodness and truth and that it's all made up as a sort of power grab. I think we might also ask one more thing. How on earth do you know that, right? I mean, we always sort of get on the defensive trying to ground all of our truth claims, but you know, we ought to ask people really genuinely, how do you know that? How is it that you and Marx and like two other people are able to really see behind the curtain of reality? You know, what makes you guys so special? Because for the rest of us, it looks like, no, something could be true and a legitimate truth claim without just trying to have power over other people.
I get the feeling that before people get on an airplane, for example, they have total confidence, you know, in Bernoulli's principle. Or if they're going to drive across the Golden Gate Bridge, they have a complete confidence in the mechanical engineering principles that informed the construction of that bridge. So exactly to your point about in so many aspects of our life, we can be quite absolute about our acceptance of the truth. David, was that helpful? Was that answer helpful to you?
Yes, it was. Thanks a lot.
Good. 888-318-7884. We're going to take a short break, and then we'll get to you, Ruben, in Texas. My friends, the Catholic Answers Annual Conference is fast approaching, September 21 to 24, our ninth annual conference at the Hyatt Regency La Jolla Aventine. The theme this year is I Believe in God. We live, as Cardinal Newman observed more than a century ago, in an age of unbelief. And I think Dr. Gage will agree with me, things have not improved since Cardinal Newman made that observation. And so it falls to us, Catholics, believers, those of us, by the way, who have been given the gift of faith. You didn't do anything to get it. It was given to you. To share it and to be able to share it, to be articulate. I know we're all not going to be great philosophers like Logan Gage or great apologists like Tim Staples and Carlo Broussard, but every one of us has a duty to share the faith, and that starts with the existence of God. So please, my friends, CatholicAnswersConference.com. Join us out here in beautiful sunny San Diego, September 21. I've made that mistake twice. September 21 to 24 here in San Diego, so that you can get better at talking to others about your belief in God and bring them to the fullness of the truth. Catholic Answers Live, 888-318-7884. Right back after this.
Let us help you with your question today on Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, I'm Father Wade Menezes from the Fathers of Mercy, inviting you to Birmingham for the free EWTN Family Celebration. It's Saturday, August 26th. Enjoy talks from your favorite EWTN radio and TV hosts, including me. You can shop at EWTN's religious catalog, attend Holy Mass, and be part of a televised show. There's even a Eucharistic procession through the streets of Birmingham. Go to EWTN.com/family celebration to find out more and to register. I look forward to seeing you there.
Who was the first Catholic in your family? Were they evangelized by a friend, a coworker, a stranger?
Did you ever think that you could be that person that God uses to save a soul, and that soul could save their family, their grandchildren, and generations to come? At St. Paul Street Evangelization, a Catholic nonprofit, we train, equip, and mobilize Catholic disciples to do the urgent work of evangelization. Catholic Answers is supported in part by St. Paul Street Evangelization, streetevangelization.com.
Chris Check sitting in for Cy Kellett, Catholic Answers Live. Coming up in 15 minutes, my brother, Father Paul Check, director of the Shrine of Our Lady of Guadalupe in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Ask a priest for another about 10 minutes, a little bit more. We have the great Logan Gage, head of the philosophy department at Franciscan University, helping us understand what we mean as rational persons and what we mean as Christians when we say something is good or that is good. How do we know that good exists? How do we determine that? Or do we know that it is? How do we determine it? And then how does that affect our moral life? Let's go to Ruben in Texas, listening on the EWTN app. Ruben, welcome to Catholic Answers Live.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
For sure.
How do we know what's good within the church? With so many differing opinions, so many clergy, etc., on social media, sometimes I worry that I'm doing the wrong thing, thinking the wrong thing, going the wrong way. So how do we know, how do we determine what's good within the church?
Yeah, wonderful question.
Well, yeah, no, good. This might be more in your wheelhouse, Chris, but maybe I'll just give it a start and let you finish. But you know, I think the safest thing we can do is to understand our tradition well, right? I mean, you know, the classic example is, of course, you know, they say, and I don't know if this is actually true, but of course, this is an anecdote spread far and wide, that the way people detect counterfeit currency is by knowing the real thing, you know, and so you know. So informing ourselves about what our tradition teaches, right? Knowing our catechism well and where those truths come from can really help us recognize when a voice is sort of off track, even though they're claiming to be restoring the church and the only true Christians left and so forth. You know, we can stay on track by sort of knowing the mainstream of our history, our tradition, and so forth. But what would you say, Chris?
Well, I would ask, so the Greeks tell us, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, that we're social animals. And so I would ask you to advise me and our listeners, to what extent can we or should we make use of friendships, for example, or people that we've come to know over time, and say, okay, well, this is an involved topic for me. I don't have the theological training to get to the bottom of this. The way this person is speaking about it has this, you know, what Benedict calls sort of a studied ambiguity. Pope Benedict used that expression, and so I'm feeling a little bit bewildered, and I don't have the, you know, and I don't have the training necessarily to find the good and the evil in the proposition. Can I turn to friendships? And if I want to do that, then well, now what path should I follow?
Yeah, and I do, and I think that's even made harder by the internet, right? Where you sort of find the friendships become more and more online, where maybe you don't know whether someone's really a holy person and whether you ought to sort of listen to them to the same depth as someone else. Our relationship, you know, we just know that someone is very upset about something on the internet, and we can get pulled into that. And so, I would just say, stay in the mainstream of the church, right? You know, of the tradition, and you don't have to have a new opinion about every little footnote or phrase of every little thing that comes out, say, of the church. But stay in the mainstream. Know your catechism, right? Our job isn't to sort of, you know, parse every new little thing, Yeah.
The other thing that I would ask you about here, Logan, or I would encourage our listeners in this regard, and I feel pretty confident you would agree with me, and that is that things in theology, or even just, you know, in apologetics or in philosophy, are not necessarily going to be self-evident to us or evident to us right away. And these things often require a little bit of study. I got a note from a reader of our magazine, and the most recent issue is I Believe in God, and he was trying to take me to task a little bit, and he said, you know, I'm finding the articles in this particular issue a little bit heavy lifting, and my response to him was to challenge him a little bit and say, okay, well, if we're talking about something, if we're talking about God's existence, then this is, it may sound like a very, very simple topic on the surface, but once we start wanting to demonstrate it, we're going to need a vocabulary, we're going to need a set of categories, and we need systems to work that vocabulary in those categories. And we have to be prepared to do a little bit of work, right? I mean, I guess also that would be an answer that I would have.
Absolutely, absolutely. And this happens certainly in the moral realm as well, right? I mean, the church has taken a stance against, say, surrogate motherhood, IVF, et cetera. And for a lot of people, it just doesn't strike them as real intuitive. I mean, isn't this a way to help people? And there are many people who are, you know, suffering deeply from their inability to have children, and this could help them. And the beautiful thing about the church, though, is if you hang in there long enough and you're willing to follow the arguments down, you can see, oh, there are good reasons. This isn't just blind authority from the church. Rather, it turns out that, you know, some of these new technologies sever the vital link between, say, parent and child, this deep thing that children have a right to know their parents and so forth. And so it's the kind of thing, at the first of it, you might, you know, at glance, you might say, oh, I don't even know what to make of this. This is a complicated argument. I can't believe the church teaches that. It sounds so cruel to these people. And if you hang in there, you know, I think you will find the answers.
Ruben, is that helpful?
Very helpful. Perfect. Thank you very much. Good. Calling. Thank you.
Oh, great. Call back anytime. Of course, Ruben, I can assure you, if you stick with Catholic Answers, we will not steer you in the wrong direction. Okay? 888-318-7884. Logan, if I can just kind of follow up, and we've got a little bit of time here left, but not a great deal, on this, you know, what I think is the most critical part of the conversation we're having here, knowing what is good, what the good is, and then how we make decisions in with respect to the moral life. We had a caller that we lost who was asking about borders, and here she means, like, you know, the Texas border or something like this, and she wanted to know, you know, how can we regard borders as good when they cause a lot of suffering? So if we can use that as a point of departure to maybe answer the broader question of we might see something as good. I mean, I'm glad I have a front door, and I'm glad there's a lock on it, for example, but it doesn't mean I'm never going to allow anybody inside of my home because I like to throw parties and things like this. So it's often these things don't admit of an easy answer because answer the question for me. Why don't they?
Boy, yeah, that's a hard one for me. I'm certainly no expert on this sort of issue, but I mean, you know, I mean, we have to balance a couple things at once. I mean, these are not utterly timeless borders handed down to us on stone tablets. That's certainly one thing we know. At the same time, like you said, in all of our personal experience, there's something about property ownership, about borders, that actually helps us take care of things in a better way for the good of the community. And that sometimes has bad consequences, right? You know, we aren't allowed to just walk wherever we want. There are fences, things like that. And so we know in our experience that we tend to need such things, so they don't strike me as just on the face of it unreasonable. On the other hand, we have other duties too, right? Duties to our fellow human beings, to help insofar as we can, and so forth. And so we don't get to just say borders are fixed at all costs, you know, and never shall anyone come across them, and so forth. That would be an unreasonable view on the other side. And sometimes in these difficult questions, we ought to just start by outlining, say, the boundaries, right? I mean, one side, it would be completely unreasonable to say we don't have any other duties to anyone. Once we form a political entity, you know, we have no more duties to other people. That's obviously unreasonable. On the other side, right, the idea that, well, these are all just made up, arbitrary, you know, boundaries on a map. There's no real good reason why anyone ever formed a border in the first place. Well, no, that can't be right. So I think we can stay away from the extremes. It's a matter of sort of prudence and learning more about the factual situations in particulars that would allow us to render a just judgment in a particular case.
You did a great job there. Catholic Answers Live, 888-318-7884. Back with Father Check in just a couple of minutes. Thank you, Dr. Gage.
Thank you so much.